This is the Mile High Five podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to Phi, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview Phi experts, side hustlers, people on their way to Phi, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Phi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
Doug, so today we're going to be answering questions from our Facebook mailbag. If you're not on our Facebook group, go to facebook.com/groups/milehighphi. And there's a lot of people in there. I think we have like 500 to 1,000 people in there. Damn. And there are lots of good discussions in there from our audience, which is pretty cool. We hang out in there every once in a while, but... So a couple weeks ago, I said, hey, Facebook group, what can we answer? And they came through. So today we'll be talking about different types of investment accounts, long-term care insurance, Phi dating, and some kid-related money decisions.
I think it's probably crazy for someone to come to us for dating advice, but we'll get into it. And I have a lot of advice on kids as someone with no kids. So this will be a very helpful episode.
That should be our next podcast, Doug. We can have a dating podcast.
That would be great. Yeah.
Give dating advice. It'll be
for
it'll be
women specifically. Yeah. A couple of middle-aged white guys giving advice to women on dating.
That would go over great.
Actually, that's a good premise for like a comedy show, but first question. We're getting to the point here. So this is from Brandon. He says, I'm basically Coast Phi, but I can't pass up the tax advantages of a 401k and a Roth IRA, even though I know focusing on my taxable brokerage account would give me more freedom sooner. How did you guys prioritize which accounts to use and when? So Carl, what did you guys do?
We did a little bit of everything. We were fortunate, and then we had more money coming in than we needed. But our primary goal was always to max out our 401k because that takes taxable income right off the top. So if your top tax bracket is, I don't even know what they are, but let's say it's 25%. If you put $20,000 into there, that's $5,000 less you're paying in taxes. So we would always seek to max that out, but we were in a great situation and we had money left over. So we also did Roth IRAs and we did just a post-tax account, which I think is overrated too. So as it stands right now, I think we have about 40% of our money in 401ks, 40% in post-tax, and the rest 20% in Roths. So we have three different buckets we can pull from, which I think is very good, which we'll talk about in a moment. One thing he said in here was a little bit weird and maybe contradictory. He's like, I can't pass up the tax advantages of the 401k and the Roth IRA. I think those are two very different things for very different situations. The 401k is great for a high net worth earner to reduce that taxable income. The Roth IRA is great if you might be in low taxes. You're locking that money up for the rest of your life and you'll never have to pay taxes on it again.
Okay. So we were somewhat similar. I want to ask a follow-up question. So you guys maxed out your 401k the whole time as much like since you started working. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And that's roughly around whatever, 18, 19, 20K that you put in per year because the limits were lower in the past, right?
Yeah. I think it was like 12. And I'll state something real quick. I think when the Great Recession happened, I freaked out and did not put money in, which is the exact opposite of what I should have been doing. But for the most part, we maxed it out.
Got it. Okay. So similar situation for us, and I won't belabor it, but basically I maxed out, and I think Elizabeth maxed out her 401ks for a few years, and then we stepped it down a little bit. We both had Roths, although I think Elizabeth just opened hers and didn't contribute too much, and I think I have a much smaller percentage than whatever you mentioned, the 20% in Roth. I think it's probably under 10%, something like that. It's fairly small. One thing, and I got flack on this. I was like, I'm not contributing anything to retirement advantaged accounts anymore. And the reason why is we actually had a significant amount of money in there. So when we first calculated our net worth in around 2014, took us a little while to get around to it. We're luckily moving in the right direction. We were like, hey, we have a lot of money in these retirement accounts. I don't want to work for that many more years and not be able to get money until I'm 59 and a half. Yes, there's ways to, you can kind of get some money out. But the thing is, I was like, I don't want to work anywhere close to that. So let's start just investing in these taxable brokerage accounts. And basically, we focused all of our attention roughly for the last, you know, 10 years in that area. So we stopped mostly, not 100%, but mostly for the 401k and the Roth IRA, we stopped contributing. And right now we have about, I think it's say 66%, so 2/3 in the taxable brokerage. And then the rest is either 401k or Roth. And I don't know the breakdown, but the Roth is a much smaller portion. So for me, the way I look at this is it's a math problem. So figure out when you want to retire, make an assumption, right? Sure, you're at Coast Fi, but do you want to wait until you're 59 and a half to access that? Again, there are some ways you can get to some money, but not all of it. So if you're like, I have like 15 or 20 years, I got to support myself. Like you're going to have to figure out how to get to that money. Technical problem to solve. And basically when we turn roughly 35, we stopped contributing to the retirement accounts. Another thing happened, we stopped having any sort of a employer match. So for me, I was self-employed. For Elizabeth, she didn't have that benefit.
Cool. Yeah, people get all up in arms about your situation. I remember the flack that you got, which is kind of funny because I was talking to someone about this very thing, and he's like, he's not optimizing, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, but you wanted to pay off your house, which is also not the optimal financial decision. So how do you reconcile those two? You're criticizing Doug because he didn't do what you think he should have done with his accounts to maximize that savings, but you're paying off your house, and especially right now, that is not the best money decision. Not everything has to be about money. Like there's other things like easiness of life. Like if you've got all your money in a 401k, you can get it out, but you got to jump through a bunch of hoops, do the 72T or separate but equal periodic payments. And there's a bunch of things you have to do for that. You have to plan ahead and you have to, we're not going to get into that. Maybe someday we'll have Eric Cooper on the show who will discuss it more, but yeah, not everything is about the money. And the other thing I'll say is there are advantages with having money in different accounts. Sean Mullaney talks about this all the time. If you don't want to be on Medicaid, maybe you want some money in a brokerage account so you could sell it, create some gains to keep yourself off a Medicaid situation if you want to be on the exchange. So I really like the idea of having things, and no matter where you think you'll end up, but having things in all three of those buckets, the brokerage account, the Roth, and it could be a Roth 401k too, and then a normal 401k, just so you can pull things from different accounts. Like the, we won't go into a whole ton of details, but if you've got a Roth, you could take out the principal after 5 years. So that gives you an option to take out money perhaps before retirement. If you have everything in a 401k, you could do the 72T, but you can also do Roth conversions to generate some income if you need to do that. But it's nice to have the options, especially when you're young. If you're 30, you have no idea what your situation is going to look like. So having money and everything lets you plan for any situation.
Two quick notes here. People have to, you know, figure out what's right for them. But one, it is optimizing, but it's for flexibility. So we are compromising. Everything is a compromise. There's no perfect solution. And do you want to whatever, be able to brag that you paid the small amount of taxes as you could, and you did all these things for taxes, or do you want to have flexibility? And for us, we wanted to have the flexibility. Some people want to optimize their taxes, and that's totally fine. It's just, we were like, this won't be as efficient from a tax perspective, but we could do whatever the fuck we want. And that's what we wanted. And the other part, you can convert from your IRA over to the Roth and then take out the principal, right? But you have to wait 5 years. So if you want to do this, you have to plan 5 years ahead. So if you're like, hey, I saved up all my money, hip 4% rule or whatever you're aiming towards, and then you go to an advisor or maybe a friend and you're like, all right, how could I do it? And it's like all your money's locked up in these tax advantaged accounts. You can get it out, but you have to pay a penalty, right? There's other consequences. So it's like doing it in a way with your three buckets, it gives you flexibility.
Yes.
So,
cool.
Consultant advisor. We're not professionals. It's not advice.
Our next question comes from Julie, and she said, do you favor long-term care insurance? So maybe before we answer this question, we should define what long-term care insurance even is.
And I think you're looking to me. We don't have the definition in here, but I think generally we're gonna get a little close, but it could be moving to a, you know, retirement home or an assisted living type place. And basically it's like when you can't care for yourself, you have those costs taken care of. And one of our friends locally, I think his mom got really good long-term care insurance like in the late 90s or so. And he had a really hard time actually getting the payouts because it was underpriced, basically. And I am somewhat skeptical on whether that sort of coverage works well. Elizabeth is she likes to plan for the very riskiest situations and make sure things are covered. Part of that is like long-term care insurance. And she's had some folks in her family where dementia runs in the family. So like they had to be in a long-term care situation. They couldn't live at home by themselves, even though they were, you know, pretty young. So it really hits home, and I'm not sure what we're going to do, but well, I'll stop here. Did I get the definition somewhat close to what your understanding is?
Yeah. It's insurance that's going to pay for you to be taken care of after you can no longer take care of yourself. That might be in-home nursing or a retirement home or some other form of that.
So yeah, do you have any thoughts? Have you considered such insurance?
I've thought about this a little bit. One other negative I've heard that I don't think most are aware of is that your insurance might cost $500 a month now, but it can go up. You're not locked in with that for the next couple of decades. So a lot of people get surprised by that. So that's not good. I have never personally entertained it. I met someone who, and I've since researched this, but I'm like, he was doing a sailing expedition to the Bahamas. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. He's like, well, the purpose of it is they've got a bunch of retirement homes down there and they're actually affordable. So the goal of my trip is to stop in all these different things and find one. And I looked that up and apparently there's ones in Poland and other places that may not be so expensive for healthcare in other parts of the world. So my ultimate backup plan, if it came down to it, would be probably to try to find something like that and just have whoever's around shit my ass off there.
That's not bad. That's a cool idea. Now give a shout out to Mark Troutman of Mark's Money Mind. I'm wearing his shirt here. He has a great podcast. And he has chatted with Elizabeth and I about a specific strategy where it's like you probably live in a home and long-term care, we're going to be old. Our home will be paid off, even if we're not paying it off early. And the idea is to use your home's equity to pay for long-term care insurance. So probably you sell it and then you have a pretty big chunk of money. And the assumption is that should be able to pay for your care. Big assumption, but probably going to be a chunk of money in many years when you consider, you know, the appreciation of the home and all that kind of stuff. Have you heard of this strategy?
I have not.
So it makes some sense to me because you won't need the home if you need the long-term care. So you're living, you know, potentially in a home and that sort of thing. There's also the option of perhaps like a reverse mortgage type situation, but I don't know any details about that kind of thing.
One other thing I'll say, and I'm looking at my phone right now because I wanted to tell you how many steps I walked yesterday, and it was 33,528.
So good for you.
Yeah, maybe the most profound change in my life, fire life and early retirement, is I can really pay close attention and do the right things for my body. And it, like, I'm way more active. I've got a better diet and time to research my health. I just went for a fancy blood test where they did all this fancy stuff, and I've got another consultation with them. And that's not to say something is going to kill us all, but I think if you've got the time to work on yourself, maybe you can postpone that or optimize your death. Like you said, you can optimize anything. So I'd like to optimize how I die. And even, like, according to Peter Attia, you can even stave off stuff like dementia by being very active. I won't even going to say that's a backup plan, because that's a dumb thing to say, because we're all going to die and it's unavoidable. And how many of us have the luxury of having a nice quiet death in bed? But that's what I'm shooting for, Doug.
Speaking of beds, we have a sponsor for today. And before we get to the dating and parenting advice, we should have like a very clear separation between the death and the ad. But you talked about beds. So we got Ghost Bed. And the thing is, Carl, I have to apologize to you. So I think we've recorded some stuff. We hung out, we hiked last week, we did some social things. And if I was a bit of an asshole or seemed, I don't know, out of my mind, I'm sorry. And I think part of it is I didn't sleep as well. And the sun's coming up earlier, summertime. And basically, when it gets bright, like I wake up kind of early, and I just keep waking up earlier and earlier. And was I an asshole? Was I weird? Did I say crazy shit?
Not that I know of. I didn't talk to you a whole lot, though. But yeah, Chris said you were an asshole. I just made that up. He didn't actually
fucking
say
Chris. So with sleep, which Ghost Bed has wonderful mattresses, it can help you sleep better. But the thing is, maybe a couple months ago, I cut back on the magnesium supplement that I was taking. Magnesium 3-8. Do you take that stuff?
I do not.
Okay. The reason why I stopped taking it is because magnesium can be sort of a laxative, like milk of magnesia.
Ooh.
Are you aware of that stuff?
No. So did you shit the bed, or?
I didn't shit the bed, but imagine if there was a fire hose and then you put your thumb over it and then it like went everywhere. Like, can you picture that? Like just putting your thumb and just like sprays everywhere.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. So the thing is, I was like, I'm going to cut back and stop taking this magnesium 3-8 because I had some GI discomfort. So anyway, it pretty much went away. But the thing is, man, I wasn't sleeping as well, and I started taking it again the last couple of days, and I've slept so much better. And the thing is, over the course of like 2 weeks where I was getting maybe like an hour less sleep per night, like I wasn't as happy and upbeat, and I was more stressed out, and I was like, oh man, why am I more stressed out? I got a good night of sleep. I relaxed a little bit on the new massage topper, which is like has air bladders that sort of inflate and very, very relaxing. It vibrates a bunch. So I sort of chilled out and I slept better. I'm taking the magnesium again, only 2 days. And the thing is, I woke up and I'm like, everything's great. If you don't get enough sleep, or for me, if I don't get enough sleep, like all bets are off. I could be a fucking asshole. I have no idea. Even if it's not outward, if you didn't notice. But I don't know. You don't take the magnesium.
I don't. I'm thinking about doing it though, because Mindy has struggled with sleep for the past 2 decades and she went to the fancy doctor too, and they recommended that. And she's like, yeah, I really think it's working. My sleep has been better. So I think I'm going to try it.
Okay. I've been taking it for a little while and I don't know if it's the type of magnesium or whatever, but you know what? Sleeping better is a good enough trade-off for the slight GI discomfort. So I can send you a link of the stuff that I get. It's just a capsule and it's pretty good.
Okay, cool. What time of day do you take it?
So usually, ideally, I'll take one like in the morning, and then I'll take like two at night. So, and it's supposed to help like cognitive function and all that. I think a lot of us are deficient in magnesium, but you know, just make sure you're next to a toilet.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. So this is brought to you by Ghostbed. I'm sure they love that long commercial, but it's related to sleep, man. It's related to sleep. The massage chopper is really cool, extremely relaxing. They have some meditation programs. There's an app that hooks up. It's a very cool plush thing. You can put it on your mattress, but I find it on the floor works really well. So you can just put it on the floor or couch or whatever. And I know you guys have been testing out the Ghostbed mattress. How you guys like it?
Yeah, it is. It is great. We have not slept on it yet, but Mindy and I have. Boy, this sounds like we're going in the wrong direction. We have laid on it for.
Oh yeah. Were you laying on it, or was she laying on it?
We were both laying on it.
Oh, okay.
And we had our guest BJ. He took he christened it. What? He took the first sleep on it.
All right.
So.
Wow, they're getting their ads worth here. So Ghostbed is a family-owned business, 60,000 five-star reviews. They have a 101-night at-home sleep trial and a 20-year warranty. I think it depends on the specific product that you get, but you can go to ghostbed.com/milehighfi to save 50%. And before we get to more questions here, you went to Louisville. And we talk a little bit more about this in the sound check that we'll play at the end. But you drink some bourbon out there. You big whiskey bourbon guy, or what's the deal?
Not really at all. We were actually making fun of that. We had a bourbon tasting. I think it was Old Forester, and that was a recommendation from BJ. And we looked up all the tasting notes, like this one has hints of apricot and all that. I'm sure you've seen all that, and apple.
Tobacco. It's earthy.
Like, I don't know. I could tell that they were different, but probably like 1% different. So I was not born to be a taster, apparently.
You just have to drink more of it, I think. And you hung out with Eric. Eric's pretty cool. We've seen him at a bunch of events, and he's famous for the 72T.
Yes, the separate but equal periodic payments, which allow you to access your 401k early. We'll have him on at some point, but... Yeah, Eric's a super cool guy. He let us stay in his guest room at his place. He's got a pretty cool place. He's got 14-foot-high ceilings in his condo, which I've never seen that before in a house.
Fancy.
I know.
Now, when you were in Louisville, I think as the locals call it, did you get one of those hot browns? Did you hear about a hot brown?
Is this something I need to look up on Urban Dictionary, Doug? Because no, we kept it above board.
I believe it's an open face. Google it while I'm telling you. I think it's an open face turkey sandwich with brown gravy on it. Ooh. I think it's pretty good. I'm surprised you didn't run across. I think there's like billboards with like, come get your hot brown right here.
Oh, there's
something like that. Yeah, it's pretty good, right?
We saw a Whizburger an ad for that, but not hot brown. A hot brown sandwich is an American hot sandwich originally ordered at the Brown Hotel in Louisville. It's a variation of a traditional Welsh rarebit. What does that mean? And was one of the two signature sandwiches created by chefs in the Brown Hotel. It doesn't actually say what it is, but it looks like turkey with gravy. It looks great. Kind of hungry. I haven't eaten yet.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good thing. I always like to check out the food at any place that I go to. I'm a big food person. I eat every day. Yeah. I eat every day.
So it's got turkey, bacon, and mame sauce. M-O-M-A-Y.
Oh, must be like the house sauce or something like that.
I'll be there to visit Eric in July, so I'm gonna go for it.
Yeah, get yourself a hot brown. You should get a t-shirt.
can there be your picture on there?
Okay. Yeah, whatever it takes to get you that shirt on you. All right, so Matt wrote in for dating advice. So Carl, why don't you read this one out?
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, Doug. So Matt is single and he wants to find a partner, but I'm curious, Doug, like say your life was exactly the same as it was now, except you were a single man. How would you approach the dating scene? Because I feel it's vastly different than when we were younger. Like I found Mindy even before dating apps were a thing, and I know you came a little bit after that, but what would you do right now? You're single, but you don't want to be single. How would you find a partner?
I chatted with one of our friends, I won't mention who, but basically I wouldn't use any dating apps. I would just do like meetups and groups and go to whatever classes or gatherings where I could just organically meet people. And basically the apps sound insane. People get stressed out and it sounds like it could be fun for a short amount of time, but then it's kind of a drain. So yeah, I would just do normal activities, whatever, go to cooking classes and other shit that I'm interested in, basically.
My answer was going to be the exact opposite. I would download all those apps and go crazy on them and see what happened. But I've heard a lot of negative things about the apps, like people don't portray themselves how they should. And then you see them in real life and like, wow, this is nothing like your description, or the picture is from like 15 years ago and stuff like that. So like, I've never used an app before, but everyone I've met who has gotten married in the past 10 years has probably met through an app. Like, yeah. No one ever meets people in school or wherever people used to meet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, generally it sounds like meeting in person is just much better. It's like, it's faster. Like, you know, instantly, instead of like, I hear people waste a lot of time, like sending messages back and forth. And then you meet in person, you're like, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
So
do you think it would be easier for us? And I'm going to funnel this back to Matt's question. Like, for us, we have a big community of people. So we already have people who have passed through a certain filter. If you're at economy, you probably share values with us. Like, would you leverage that? Would you go to economy and try to chat people up?
Perhaps. The issue is, so economy is big enough where there might be a handful of single people, but it seems like a lot of folks are attached at the event. So potentially, that said, you could probably use the network effect of that, where like you can, you know, meet a lot of people at economy and then let them know that you're on the market and you want to meet someone with like similar values. So that, I mean, I think that would be more effective instead of, it could be, it seems stressful to like go to economy and be like, all right, I'm going to try and meet someone. And there's like, whatever, small percentage of actual single people.
Yeah. There are people who we know who have met, and I'm thinking of Brittany and Flynn, right?
Yeah.
I think they're together now. They're not officially married, but they've been together for years, and I'm pretty sure they met at economy.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Patrick and Julie from Wisconsin, they actually met on a Fi dating app, which is, I think that's pretty rare. I don't think those dating apps have their critical mass of people on there. There's probably like 30 dudes for every lady on there. But it worked out for them.
Right. Yeah. It seems tough. Well, and you said you would hop on the apps to check it out. It seems like an interesting situation, but yeah, what do you think of like only meeting people in person just to be different?
I think it's a lot more difficult. Like, if you meet someone on the app, you're looking for people who are already looking for people. So you've already leveled up a couple times, where if you go to economy, you'd have to figure out who's single, who's not, and you don't know if they've got a partner already. I think meeting someone in person would be a much better way. I think it'd be a much higher quality way to meet someone, because depending on where you are, like I mentioned before, you've probably passed through other filters that way too. Your economy, so you probably like money and saving and like a lot of the similar things that we do. I think it has a lot of value. It's just, where do you meet people? Like, we're done with school. We're not going to meet people through that. We don't go to, like, where else do people meet at? Like church and,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Work.
Yeah, work. We don't do that anymore. So we'd have to like go to the park or go play pickleball, and that probably skews older. And do you want someone 20 years older than you? I don't think so. But
you can get a job somewhere, I guess.
Go work at Costco and meet someone like serving hot dogs. You could relive your glory days when you served hot dogs in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah. You like reach down and you touch the hot dog at the same time and your hands brush together.
You both grab for the same hot dog.
And then, it's like a Lady and the Tramp situation.
Yes.
Okay. So Matt asks where you could meet folks. So, and maybe some context clues. So here's the thing we could brainstorm, and I think this may or may not be helpful, but basically like the meetups can, in my opinion, it could help you identify the common interest, right? So if you're into hiking, you can go to like whatever the singles hiking or the 20s hiking group or whatever in your area. And that filters for like an activity level, or it could be like the cooking class or like the foodie group or whatever. So you could find the right meetup or gathering to ensure that you have similar interest. But after that, how do you filter on the values of FIRE or financial independence? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's interesting. You'd probably have to look for some context clues, see what comes up in the conversation, how they spend their time, what they do on weekends, what kind of car they drive, where they live, a little bit of things like that. Yeah, I don't know. This is a hard one. I guess like if you've met someone hiking, that's another great filter there, because they've passed through a filter just like being at economy. So I think those meetup groups would be a super good way to meet people.
And I think you probably can be pretty direct with some questions, but not ask directly about financial independence or like their job situation, as far as like how long they want to work or anything like that. But you could say very early on, like, oh man, I saw this article where people are retiring early. Do you have any, have you seen that? Like any thoughts on that? And I think you could probably like gauge their reaction to see like, you know, the person you're looking for would be like, oh yeah, I've seen those articles and it sounds really interesting. That's a pretty fine, tight filter. It might be a little bit too aggressive, but like, I think just being direct might be a faster way just to like, you know, churn through people.
Yeah.
I don't know. What would you do? Like, would you wait for a little while, like go on a few dates and then say, oh, well, what do you want to do with your life in 5 years or whatever? Like, that seems weird, like an interview.
Yeah. I think the situation would present itself pretty quick, because what are they going to ask? What do you do? Oh, yeah, I'm retired. And then that would lead to a whole bunch of other questions. And that could be the prompt to ask some of these, but that could be dangerous too, because then maybe they know your money situation and they, like if you, like I could see one issue with these FI dating apps are gold diggers infiltrate it and want like a sugar mama or sugar daddy. And I don't know if those are the proper terms for going both ways. But yeah, I think you'd be able to tell pretty quickly what their values are. And I don't think it's wrong. Like some of these questions we have here, what are you saving for? Like that's a pretty interesting question that doesn't go straight to the point. It's not like, what's your net worth? Like that would be something you would not want to ask early on, but maybe on day five, if you think there's potential there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one, especially like if you're already pretty well established, or maybe you've already retired, like you have a decent net worth, and that can be a little bit awkward to figure out. And I'm not sure like what you do exactly. I don't know. So
yeah,
I think we've answered Matt really well, and he'll be able, actually, Matt, send us a message back and let us know follow-ups. And actually, what are you doing, Matt? Other single folks out there, leave a comment over on YouTube. Let us know like what you suggest, like how, like what date would you bring up financial independence? If you're like, hey, this is a big goal of mine. I want to retire in the next 10 years. And it informs a lot of my decisions and my values are all based around this. And it's like it's kind of a lifestyle and a value system. And it's probably really important to figure out early. Like, what date would you bring that up?
Yeah, I think it's best to get it out of the way super early, because I think back on a lot of the interviews we've had, and I was just talking to someone who's like, oh yeah, I knew when I was like 16 and started, she's like, yeah, I started saving up money and figured out how I was going to financially support myself for the rest of my life. So those people are going to hear you ask those questions and be like, oh yeah, this is the person, or they're going to think you're nuts and run off in the other direction, which is great too. You don't want to waste time with someone who doesn't share your values. Just get to the point.
I think it'd be cool if there was like a Rock of Love style reality show for the Phi community. So people are set up. You remember Rock of Love with Bret Michaels from Poison?
I know Bret Michaels and Poison, but I've never heard of that show.
Oh man. I just watched the behind the music for Bret Michaels, and what a great guy. Anyway, I don't think that show's ever going to happen, but people just think about it. There's probably maybe 3% of y'all understand what I'm talking about at all, but I think that would be a hilarious show. I'm going to let Steven from Camp Phi know. I think he could set it up. This would be a great evening activity on a Saturday, you know? That would be the whole show. It's like the dating game or something like that.
Yeah.
Imagine it like that, except with Bret Michaels.
Nice.
Okay. So, Carl, this one's for you. This is from Andrea. I'm a single mom to a toddler in just over a year into the FIRE movement. What advice do you have to parents pursuing FI with kids? And what would you do differently? What thoughts do you have about raising a financially responsible set of kids?
Ooh, my thoughts on these have evolved over time, and I'm curious to see what you think of them. Doug, I know you don't have kids, but you're a financially responsible adult. What I've realized after having two kids is that every kid is completely different. You can try to game the system for their kid to make them appreciate money. What resonates with one kid is going to repulse the other one. For example, with our older kid, she's a lot like me, very conservative with money. She'd get money for her birthday. I remember one time we went to Target when she was 8, like someone had given her a gift card. She's like, okay, I want to buy this thing. I'm like, okay, well, you can buy that. But if you buy it, that money is gone forever and you're locked into that one thing. And basically, you'll have to earn that money again if you want to buy something else. And she's like, oh, okay, I'm not going to buy it. And she put the thing back on the shelf. The other one, I give the same spiel to it. She's like, okay, whatever, Dad, I want it. Stick it in the cart and we're out of here. So it's very difficult to raise kids to be successful with money because you don't know what is going to resonate with them. Not that it's worth pursuing, but I think people overweight that. Therefore, I think the best thing you can do is just set a good example for them and spend time with them and just show them love, because if you do that, they're actually going to like you and they're probably going to mimic you more and they're going to be more receptive to you when you do give them suggestions. So my number one advice for raising a financially smart kid is just spend time with them as much as you can. Be there to listen to them, go on bike rides with them, and do all that stuff. And then everything else will take care of itself.
Follow-up question. Because your kids are so different, would you have said the same thing that, you know, the Target scenario, when you know one of them is naturally more conservative and one is naturally more spendy? Would you sort of slide the scale of the spectrum so that you met them where they were at? Because it sounds like maybe the older one, you could have been like, hey, this will be really good if you could spend a little money. And it sounded like maybe she was scared to spend it. She's like, oh, the money goes away forever. What? I don't want that. So yeah, just any, would you have done that differently? Not that you regret it, but it's just a different decision point.
I think it probably mattered less than I thought. I don't think that lesson actually taught her anything. I think she's very conservative, and even if she would have ended up buying the thing, it would not have, it wouldn't have changed her much. So I think the amount of input and influence that I thought I could have over their lives, I overweighted that. It's not nearly what I thought it would be. I think people have to figure out things on their own. You can give them gentle guidance and hope they do the right thing, but that's about the best you can do.
Okay, cool.
One other point, she said, what would you do differently? Get myself so busy, especially when they're young, before they go to school. Those are their formative years. You can really spend time with them. You're with your kids for 18 years, but when they're teenagers, they might not like you and want to spend time with them. So the number one thing I would do is try to spend as much time with them when they're young as you can. But there's a balance to that too. Like, I enjoy work and purpose, but I definitely could have probably worked on, done one or two less remodels and had a little more kid time.
Perfect. All right. And another one for you, Carl. This is from Claudia. What did you decide to do about college expenses for your kids? How are you teaching them about money so that one day they can protect and grow what they will inherit?
Ooh, so she's assuming I'm going to leave an inheritance. So college expenses, I had the wrong information about 529s. I thought they were more restrictive than they actually are. So we never did that. The topic, our older one is now going to be a senior in high school. We've always been very open with our kids about money. And I think in this case, it might have backfired. She's like, oh, you've got all this. I can go wherever I want. Like, nope, we're not on the line for any of, it's our money, not your money. There is no we in money. I guess there is an E in there. But anyway, but fortunately our money has done well outside of the 529. So we have said we will help her out with college as long as she gets good grades, but we're going to tie it to what college costs in Colorado because she's picked out some pretty fancy schools. I'm like, okay, you can do that, but you're going to have to come up with the difference. I think it's good to have them have some skin in the game. I think they'll appreciate it a little bit more. So we are going to make them pay for some of their expenses no matter where they decide to go, but we're trying to influence them to make it a money smart decision as well. And about the whole inheritance thing, I don't know if I want to actually leave them an inheritance. We talked about the Die with Zero book, and I think I could do a lot more for them if I give them money before we croak, like buy them a house when they're 30 if they're on sound financial footing. And I think that's what we'll plan on doing. And I'm trying to, what's the term? Wag the dog or whatever. I've told them this too. I'm like, hey, if you girls, if we think we're doing really well with money, we're going to help you out early on in life versus you having to wait. Because I think like us, Doug, we've both done well. We're both in good situations. And if we inherit money, I don't think it's going to really change our lives that much, right? Like even a significant amount, I'm not going to do anything different. But if someone would have given me money when I was 30, that would have like changed my life. I could have paid off my college loans and help put it towards a house. And it's easy to say what you would have done, but I think I know I definitely would have gotten out of debt earlier. So I think if you can give people money earlier on in life, then you can really change their life. But that's hard too. There's all these situations like what if one kid is really good and responsible and the other one is not and has a terrible partner, then what do you do? Do you give the one money and not the other one because not everything's gone as well for her? I have no idea. what do you think about all this, Doug? Should parents pay for their kids for school or do you just not care?
No, I mean, it's great for me to have opinions on stuff where I can tell other people what to do when I'm like not experienced, not qualified. I think it's probably really good from a motivation standpoint for someone to pay for their own schooling or whatever the shit they want to do, right? It doesn't matter if it's college or some other pursuit that they want to do. I think they feel more accomplishment too. And I'm biased, right? Because I paid for my schooling, right? And you paid for yours, right?
Yes.
You went into debt and all that. I mean, like it's worth more than if you just show up. And I mean, some people do appreciate it, but I mean, we had skin in the game. So like you fucking go to class, you don't skip out on class and fuck around and all that stuff. And I think it's really easy if you're not paying whatever, how much is an expensive school cost, like $30,000 a year or something?
No, that's a cheap one. The expensive ones are like $72,000 a year.
Golly. Yeah. So it's like, you're not going to fuck around if you're like, I'm going to have to owe hundreds of thousands of dollars at the end of this thing. And then then it's like, it's really clear, like either it's valuable to them or it's not. And if you could just walk up and have everything paid for, then they're not going to value it as much.
Yeah. I think we've kind of lost our way. So on one side of the spectrum, you go to college because you think it's just what you're supposed to do and it's just a continuation. On the other side, which is how I thought, is I am going there so I can get a job that pays me more money. And I don't think that was necessarily right too, but I definitely wanted to make that time worthwhile. Where I went wrong in that is you have to find, if you hate what you do and it makes a lot of money, then your life is pretty pointless at that point and you're going to be miserable. But the main point of it should be so you can get a better job. If you're going to go there and screw around and come out of that and become like an assistant manager at Walgreens something you could do without the degree, then you've kind of, maybe the 4 years were fun, but you've set yourself back financially. There has to be some money consideration in this, right, Doug? Like,
yeah, let's not make fun of assistant managers in retail, man. They're doing a good job too. Come on.
No, that's great. If you like doing that, you probably don't have to go to school to get that job. Therefore, you should not go to school. You should just go directly to that job and do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the inheritance stuff, like you stated it pretty well, but I'll emphasize, like, yeah, I could have used some money in my 20s and it would have been super helpful. Now it will not be very helpful. I won't even notice it. And further, like Elizabeth and I are thinking like, hey, what are we going to do with our money? So we've come up with a plan and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, like our siblings, right? They're going to be our age roughly. They don't need our money. So we're like, oh, what about nieces and nephews? Maybe we could help them out. You know how old they're going to be when we potentially are going to die? Like fucking 50. They're not going to need our money either. So then it gets a little complicated at that point, right?
And if they did need it, you probably wouldn't want to give it to them because they probably made some mistakes and you know they're just going to like burn it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a difficult thing. And I think probably like charity is the right way to look at it. Like we were talking about that. You know, maybe we open a school for border collies and agility training or something, you know. It's really going to help the world out. just a bad example, but maybe we should talk about that because we're not that great at charity currently.
I think you should. The Doug Cunnington School of Border Collie Excellence, you could have like a Frisbee 101 where just like 10 feet. And then if they graduate like 300 class, we'll be like an aerobie, like a super long disc. And they got to run like for a minute to catch the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And awesome. Georgie. She's such an amazing, amazing dog.
You'll have a valid dogtarian. One other thing I want to say about this real quick, Doug, is I was talking to a friend a couple weeks ago. He went to a high school graduation. I think there was 120 something graduating. Out of all those, one of them said they wanted to go into the trades. And that's why when we need a new furnace in Colorado, it costs us like $20,000, where in Chicagoland, it might be like $5,000. I think college is overrated. I think you could probably do a lot better for yourself if you went into a trade, electrician, HVAC technician. We know people like this in the FI community.
Yeah.
Probably my wealthiest friend in Longmont owns a business where he installs water heaters. He's got all these rentals and stuff, doing really well because there just aren't people who want to do these jobs. So don't overlook a trade. And plus you can do it like in 18 months or whatever. You don't have to go to school forever.
100%. I'm pretty sure like if I was graduating now, I would aim in that direction. So
yeah,
no way I would go to college right off the bat. I could see some advantages in certain areas, but I think I would learn a trade, work for a couple years, get some strong mentors in just entrepreneurship and small business, and then it'd be amazing. You'd be so far ahead of your peers who have whatever, $100,000, $200,000 in debt.
Oh, so far. Oh, HVAC. Oh, those people are raking it in here. Yeah. Oh, crazy.
All right. Anything else on your mind, Carl?
I think that's it, Doug. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, and you're going to be out for a bit, so we got some folks filling in. I think Elizabeth may sit in on an episode coming up soon.
Awesome.
Give a two-month update of not working. Amberly is going to sit with me, maybe a couple other folks too. So we won't mention where you're at so people won't stalk. You know you got a lot of stalkers out there, right?
It happens. Those of you with restraining orders, you know who you are. Please obey them.
All right, we'll catch you on the next episode. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington, the Balder host, and Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person. So the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member, or even your enemy, will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using. And that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just two guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right, Carl, you just got back from a road trip. I'm a road trip lover myself, and I think I've done a very similar route. So where'd you go?
Yeah, this is interesting because it all relates back to the Phi community. So I had a friend getting married in Richmond, and we were a little bit on the fence about going just because I don't like him, just because our life was very busy. So we're like, yeah, 50-50. But then another friend that we know through the Phi community, Rory, said, oh, I've got a car in Richmond, and I'm trying to figure out how to get it back to Boulder County. I'm like, oh, wow, now I've got two reasons to go there. So I'll do it. So we went there, picked up this guy's car, attended the wedding. We saw Brad Barrett from Choose Phi, which is cool, had dinner with him. And I'd never been to Richmond before, so we got to see a little tiny bit of that. Have you been?
Yeah, my sister and her family live there. So I've only spent maybe 2-3 days, and it was extremely rainy. So we didn't do a ton, but it was awesome where we were at.
Okay. I made one little error. So they're like, oh, you want to stay near this specific neighborhood? I don't think I want to say it. I don't want to make anyone mad, but they're like, you'll stay here. It's super walkable. Lots of nice stores and all that. So we got there kind of late. I'm like, you know what? I'm a little bit restless. Let's go out for a walk. So we start walking in. The neighborhood was not so nice. We noticed lots of police, like bars over windows and like predatory businesses, like check cashing things and like shitty liquor stores. I'm like, what is this? Like, let's just go back. This isn't how this was sold to us. And then I realized I had looked at the map wrong, and we were kind of on the dividing line between a really nice part and a really not so nice part. And we had taken a stroll on a weekend night through the not so nice part, which is interesting, but we're still here. We survived. It was great. On the way back, we saw our mutual friend, Eric Cooper, in Louisville, Kentucky. Have you been there before?
Yeah, a couple times.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice. I got bourbon there.
Yeah. Eric's a super cool guy. We met up with some of his friends. We did a small bourbon tasting, and it was beautiful. The parts we saw were really nice, so I think we're actually going to go back there in July, which is part of a different road trip. So we met Eric through the Phi community, and then we stopped and saw our mutual friend, Kristen, the St. Louis meteorologist. And she organized a Phi event for us when we were there. So we went and saw a Cardinals baseball game. And the cool thing about this was Mindy's junior high school friend, like her oldest friend in the world, lives in St. Louis. So they came too, her and her husband, which is pretty cool. It's always interesting when Phi people meet non-Phi people. I always have a little bit of anxiety about that, but it always works out fine. And this time did as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. What do you say? Like, hey, we're going to a game, and like we're friends with some people. So there's going to be like whatever 15 or 20 folks or something.
I don't think we even mentioned that. I think we're going to be in town. We're going to see some other friends for a game. So these other non-Phi friends got there and they're like, who are all these people? Like, how do you know these people? And then sometimes you end up going down a rabbit hole. And in this case, it did not. They're like, oh, they're just fans of Mindy's podcast that are here and stuff like that. And then conversation didn't move on from there, which is kind of how I like it.
Yeah. And I mean, like after a little while, some gatherings, I guess, I don't even know if they're like Phi related, but you don't ask the basic question of like, oh, what kind of work do you do? Like, I can't remember the last time someone even asked me like what I do.
Isn't it cool how that doesn't come up? I was just thinking that same thing, and I don't think that came up this time either. It's nice. I think we're progressing as people if we don't have to ask that stupid question every time we meet someone new.
Yeah. And I mean, it's probably Well, for most people, for us, it's different, but it's the least interesting thing. But what we do is super interesting. But I can't remember the last time someone asked me that, which is really cool.
It is cool. One, I was thinking about this. I was at the Hoffman process, and you're not allowed to tell people what you do. But at the end we could, and I'm glad we weren't allowed to before, because someone will tell you what you do, and then it might change your interaction with them and maybe give you judgments, either positive or negative. For example, Kristen in St. Louis is a meteorologist. She's on TV, so she gets stopped all the time by people. So if other people would have known that, and I don't know if they figured it out or not, maybe that would have twisted the conversation, but it never came up among these like 25 or 30 people. And I'm sure most of them may have known that, but like my friends, I don't know. It's cool that it did not come up.
Yeah. Do you think most of the time they're like, hey, Kristen, you were wrong on weather again, you know, again? I'm just kidding, Kristen. This is just entertainment. You do a great job. It's a very difficult area of the country because of all the moisture and heat, cool stuff that's going on.
Tornadoes, they've got some excitement. I think there was one close while we were there. That Iowa tornado happened when we were out there.
That was insane.
Yeah.
And I know Kristen's going to text me as soon as she listens to this. Be like, why'd you even say anything? Well, that's a cool road trip. How was the rest of it? You made it back. Kansas is just like quick shot, right?
Yeah, I stopped and saw some stuff in Kansas, and it was it was less than exciting, but I saw some cool museums. We have another road trip through Kansas going the other way, and we're going to stop at the Air Combat Museum in Topeka and the American Jazz Museum in Kansas City in July when we pass back through.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's a good road trip.